Securities and advisory services through Independent Financial Group, LLC, a registered broker-dealer and investment advisor. Member FINRA, SIPC.
Good morning, southeastern Connecticut, western Rhode Island, to the Hamptons, and up to Glastonbury, maybe, and down through probably Brantford, or if we go that close, maybe Clinton. Good morning, everybody. My name is Dennis O'Brien. I'm president of O'Brien Retirement Investment Group in Mystic, Connecticut. My website is www.obrienretire.com. If you'd like my retirement 10 commandments, just go to my website. And I'll set them out to you. Many of you have asked for them, and some of you have actually sent it to 300 or 400 of your friends, and I thank you for that. It's a good way to get the conversation going and talking about preparing for retirement, whether you're in your 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, after you retire, how to generate income and get things going again with your life and whatnot. I have a very special guest today. His name is Bruce Burton. Welcome, Bruce.
Well, thank you very much. Bruce, nice to be here.
Thanks for coming. You live in Mystic, right?
Yeah, living in Mystic. Been there for 30 years or so.
Okay, Bruce is not a client. He's a friend of mine. And we got to know each other many, many years ago. And we started talking at the Y. And he started telling me about retiring early and some of his stories of traveling around. And when I ran into him probably, maybe a month ago?
Yeah,
a month ago.
Yeah,
and I said, "Hey, I got a radio show. You want to come on?" And you gave me a look like you're
April
Fool's,
right?
Joke. You're kidding, right? But you know what? Sometimes, you know, I like to talk to people. Last week, I had a bond daddy on, a guy that runs a lot of money on Wall Street, whatnot. But I also want to talk to people who retired early, how they did it, what they did, and your story is a little bit unusual in terms of some of the things you did, and I think it's just fascinating and whatnot. How old are you now?
69.
You're 69. Damn. He looks good for 69.
I mean,
this guy, right? The Y every morning, you know?
Yeah. You can say that because people can't see us.
Well, I always say I got a face made for radio, you know. You have a face made for TV, though, or soap opera star, you know.
Well, thanks.
You know, with the wife and her 38 years old. Okay. So anyway, let's go into it and talk about you started working very young age, right?
Yeah.
And you worked where?
Well, it started out plucking chickens in high school.
Plucking chickens in high school?
Plucking chickens in high school. Yeah, that was a long time ago. Well, a few years back.
Where'd you go to high school?
Terre Haute.
Terre Haute?
Rhode Island.
Yep. Okay.
And then I was an electrician for a while.
Yep.
And then I went in the Navy.
Yep.
And spent a couple of years in the Navy. And then worked at Electric Boat.
Okay.
And I was a lineman for a while. Yep. And another job as an electrician, and then back to Electric Boat. And I started at Electric Boat about in the early 70s, but then I went back to school, got my degree, and been all over the place in Electric Boat, a lot of different jobs over there.
Yeah. So you went through the boom times in the 70s.
Went through the good times and the bad times, and the porpoising up and down of the defense contractors with with the administrations and things like that. I got laid off several times.
You did.
I did many times, but each time it led to a different job, a better job.
Yeah.
And each time I moved, and that's when I went to the power company, and I was a lineman for a couple of years, and then we had the energy crisis, and they had never had a layoff in their history, but I ended up on the street.
Wow.
And my wife was pregnant at the time, and I had no insurance and the whole thing.
Yeah.
And ended up back at Electric Boat, and I said, got my degree, and then went into different jobs over there, nuclear engineering planning and purchasing. I was a buyer for several years.
And you met a lot of people at work.
Met a lot of people. Yep. Went back to engineering, then design.
Yep.
And then I landed on the new new carrier project for the last 6 years.
Yep.
And we were doing the two reactors for the new carrier in Virginia.
Yep.
And they liked the style of reactor, but they wanted them, two of them, and they needed them twice as big. So
yeah,
we got on that, and
that
took me for the last 6 years, and I worked.
And you retired what year?
In 07.
You retired in 07, and you were how old at that time?
58.
So you went out at 58.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. My last 6 years, I worked 3 days up here in, 3 days in Virginia and 2 days in Connecticut. So okay. It was back and forth every week. But then, I ended up in the hospital with a Mercer infection I was laying there in L&M Hospital looking across the river at Electric Boat, and the infection was so bad in my nose, I almost died. And give me a little time to crunch numbers. I was in quarantine for 8 days.
Wow.
And I started saying, you know, how much is enough? And how much is enough? And I thought about that, and I ended up going back to work, and I said, you know, I'll never be this young or this healthy again. So if I don't take the bull by the horns and go, then shame on me.
Right.
So that's what I did.
So you were ready.
I was ready.
You had one of those things in life that says, all right.
Yep. I was ready.
Yeah, you had that moment. And stuff.
I was. Yeah. And my brother had said to me one time, he said, you know, Bruce, he says, as bad as this infection is, as close as you were, something will come out of it. And down the road, some years, you'll probably look back and say, geez, if I hadn't gotten sick, I wouldn't be here. If I hadn't gotten sick, I wouldn't be there. But I got over that, and it all worked out good.
So for the young people listening, when you come up across something that at the time seems like it's overwhelming and there's nothing you could do to make it better, and you've reached some of these crossroads in your life where mm-hmm. you know, you got laid off with a pregnant wife and no insurance,
yep.
or you're laying in a hospital bed wondering whether you're going to wake up
right.
the next week. What do you say to these young kids that seem to, you know, or anybody at any age where a spouse has passed or you're at, what do you say to them to get them through and make them realize it will change, it will get better?
Well, there's a, I look at life like that we've all won the grandest lottery of all time just by being here. And you stop and think of all the seeds and the eggs and the sperm and everything that died trying to get to that point. And we are the very one that got to that point.
Right.
And we've lived, to go through a healthy pregnancy and to be born and to land in this country, you're really on top of the heap anyway.
Yeah.
And
And
then all these things, you know, all you can do is take that next step forward, no matter how bad it is. Everybody goes through it. Everybody's got their cross to bear.
Right.
And if you always keep your eye on the future, I think that's the key.
Yeah. And I think prayer can help people too. Just getting out of yourself.
Prayer can. Yeah.
Prayer and having a spiritual part of you.
Everybody prays in their own way.
Yeah, and their own
but
way.
It is important.
I think so too.
Yep.
I think
and,
so. Too.
You know, I we're not alone. That's for sure.
No, we're not. And anybody out there going through a hard time, reach out. Reach out to a minister or a priest or a friend. But reach out. Call that 800 number. But reach out. The holidays can be hard on people, especially when they're
don't be afraid of it.
Okay, we'll be back. We're going to follow some of Bruce's travels around this great country of ours. Dennis O'Brien, retirement life and investing. See you in a second. Dennis O'Brien here. Welcome to the Retirement Life and Investing Show here on 94.9 News Now. If you have any questions for me or Bruce, our phone number is 860-464-9490. Thanks for tuning in, and we appreciate it. I'm with Bruce Burton, who retired at 58, and for the next 7 years, Bruce, November through April, took an RV and went around our country by himself and with his one or two motorcycles in the back.
Yeah, it was a motorhome, a toy hauler.
Yep.
And I got it from BMW. The guy was a corporate racer for BMW, and he wasn't using it anymore. So I happened to come along at the right time. Had a 10-foot garage in the back, and a Harley on one side and a little Honda scooter on the other. and my bicycle.
Wow. So how'd you finance it?
I financed it kind of creatively. I will just say for this conversation, about $50,000 I wanted to spend on it. And I didn't want to take the $50,000 out of my own account. So I took a home equity line of credit for the $50,000. And I bought the motorhome, and I outfitted it, put a little workbench in the back and so forth. And then I kept my $50,000 invested, and I invested it in some high dividend paying mortgage REITs, and I was getting 10 to 12% on them. So I was getting about $5,000 a year back on the $50,000 that I kept in my account.
Yep.
And then I just paid the interest on the loan every month, which was about $100, $105.
Right.
So it cost me about $1,200 a year. And I was making $5,000. So, plus depreciation and so forth, it was about $2,000 or $3,000 a year that it cost me. But when you look at the price of an RV, right now they're about $250 a day to rent something like that. And that's about $6,000 or $7,000 a month.
Right.
So it really was quite a bargain. You just have to kind of think outside the box a little bit and play that game, and it worked out well.
Yeah.
And that's why I could do it for so long.
Yeah.
And I did it for this about 7 years.
Yeah. How much did gas cost you, by the way?
Gas was expensive. Yeah. When I first bought the RV, I pulled out, and I made a phone call to my brother, and I said, Brian, I just bought my first $200 tank of gas. And he said, what?
$200.
But it was. You know, a 55-gallon tank, and at the time, gas was about $3 a gallon, and it could be expensive.
Yeah. Was the first day on the road, did it seem surreal to you, just heading down the road in this brand-new RV?
It sure did. Yeah, it sure did. I was, I really felt like I was living the dream, and because I was.
Yeah.
And I'd wanted to do it for a long time, and it just fell into place for me. You know, I happened to be single and unattached and recently retired, and I just wanted to roam. I had this wanderlust for a long, long time, and no direction, no schedule, no time constraints, no reservations. And the only thing I did in the morning, I'd wake up and I'd put my road atlas on my little table and I'd make a nice cup of mocha.
Yep.
And I'd sit there and I'd say, well, where do I want to go today? And the first thing I'd have to figure out is where am I?
Did you hear a little voice in your head tell you, well, let's go here.
Yep. And I'd look for the little red spots on the road atlas, and those were points of interest. And, I would just head for them, but I very rarely got to them because I'd find something else along the way.
Well, that was interesting, too.
That was interesting. Yeah, exactly. Dennis. And I'd put my blinker on, and I'd say, wow, look at this. And, geez, I'd land there, and I found warm mineral springs that way, and I found a incredible petrified forest in Mississippi with these huge trees that were millions of years old, and it was just a big log jam when the glaciers melted and flooded the Mississippi Valley, and all these logs had landed there, and so these things, they just eat up your whole day.
Yeah.
And then I would look for somewhere to land about 4 o'clock.
Yep.
And, turn the vehicle into the sunset.
Yep.
And, have a little happy hour.
And do whatever you wanted to do.
That's right. Do whatever I wanted to do. And,
you realize how many people out there listening going, darn.
Yeah. Well, like I said before, you know, you'll never be this young or this healthy again.
Yeah.
So if you don't do it, shame on us. And if you can do it. And there are ways to do it. Like I said, you don't really need to use your own money. You'd have to have enough to live on.
Yeah.
But there's ways that you can finance it, and which Dennis is very good at. And but there are ways to do it.
Thanks for the plug. I appreciate it. What surprised you most about driving around the country? What surprised you? You know,
I think it was mostly the people I met.
Really?
When I left, I had no idea who I was going to meet, how they were going to accept me, and I found out I had best friends all over the country, and I just hadn't met them yet.
Did they tell you you looked funny? You talked funny?
Yes, they did. They did. Many of them told me I look.
Because I'm listening to you talk with the Rhode Island, Connecticut accent.
Yep, you got that,
and you're
right
down in Mississippi, and they'll go, hey, you're not from around here, are you?
You ain't from these parts, are you? You ain't from these parts. And,
that's funny.
And that
got conversations going, I'm sure.
That got conversations going. Yeah. On one of my trips, I was on the Hatfield-McCoy trail.
Yeah.
And, I happened to see the Hatfield Family Cemetery, so I stopped the truck and took a picture of it, and right across the street was this little drive, and it said Hatfield Drive. So I heard somebody chopping out there, so I shut the truck off, I locked it up, and I walked across the street, and I got out to the back, and there was a guy cutting wood, and I said, excuse me, I said, are you Mr. Hatfield? He says, I am, what can I do for you? And I says, well, I says, I'm Bruce Burton, I said, I'm from Connecticut, and he says, what are you doing here? I said, I'm just driving around. I showed him the truck. And he said, well, I'll be darned. He said, come sit on the porch. He says, let me get some peas and strawberries out the garden. He says, and we'll sit and talk. So he told me the whole story of the Hatfields and McCoys.
No way.
Yep.
And he was one of the ancestors.
He was his great-great-grandfather was Sid Hatfield, who was the original sheriff of the Hatfield and McCoys. And we sat there and watched a thunderstorm roll through those hills of West Virginia.
Yeah.
And he told me the whole story of it, which was quite incredible.
Yeah.
And all started, you know, during the Civil War in one state. It was right on three corners of the states, Kentucky, West Virginia, and Virginia, I believe. And, of course, they all had their stills.
Yep.
And Sid Hatfield was friends with them. And all of a sudden he took the job as a sheriff because he needed the job. And all of a sudden, hey, wait a minute here. And then some pig got
shot. Don't you love it?
Yeah. Pig got shot and a gun went
pig
off.
Got
and
shot.
And the rest is history. But he was a great guy.
Yeah.
Great guy. And you just happened to meet these people along the way.
Yeah.
And what surprised me a lot was most people were more interested in what I was doing.
Isn't that something?
And I was so interested in them.
Yeah.
And it was really funny.
That you know, truly is amazing, isn't it?
It is amazing. Dollywood, I was in Tennessee one time at Pigeon Forge, and I stopped at Dollywood, and I stayed there for a long time, and they were doing this show on the back porch, I think it was called, the family reunion on the back porch, and I sat there and watched it, and they got all done, and they went out to the bottom of the stage, and I asked if I could take a picture with them. I said, sure. And so I got my picture taken and started talking with them. And they said, what are you up to? You don't sound like you're from around here. I said, no, I don't. And so I ended up going out for a meal with them at the Red Lobster later.
Yeah.
And not with Dolly, but I did get to meet her a while later. And the one girl that was singing there, she had never been on a Harley before. And I wanted to see where they lived in the hills when they grew up.
Yeah.
Dolly and her and all the cousins. And
yeah.
So took her for a ride on the Harley. I got to see where they grew up. She got a ride on a Harley.
Yep.
And had a nice meal with them. And I did get to meet Dolly.
Yeah.
Quite by accident. She was coming there to Dollywood to do a show, but nobody knew it.
Yeah.
And so she told me, and I got to sit in the front row and got to meet Dolly. And I got inside her motorhome.
Really?
They had an incredible motorhome, and I got to take a little tour of that.
Yeah,
and we sat down to eat, and they wanted to know what I was doing. What are you doing riding around in this thing all over the country? How did you get to do that? And they were still singing for a living. So, you know, you always think everybody's doing so good, but actually they look at you in a different way.
Yeah, they do look at you in a different way.
Yeah, it was quite incredible.
What was your impression of Dolly?
Oh, she's nice. She is a very, very genuine person.
Very gracious to you. Yeah.
I didn't get to chat with her a lot, you know, because she was like mobbed. But but it was quite a thrill just to meet somebody of that stature and realize what a normal person they are.
Yeah. Family's very important down there.
Family's very important down there. It's their number one priority.
Yeah. Did you ever wind up at Loretta Lynn's place outside 40 miles west of Nashville?
No,
yeah.
No, I did go to Nashville. I took the Natchez Trace Parkway, which goes from Nashville to Natchez, Mississippi. It's 450 miles, and it's the nation's longest national park. And It's only a couple hundred yards wide, but they've taken this Natchez Trace, which originally started as a buffalo trail,
right,
and then a Civil War trail, and on and on and on.
Okay.
And it's now a parkway, and it's just beautiful.
Yeah.
And but it ends up in Nashville. And I went to the Grand Ole Opry.
Yep.
And
That's amazing, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, we went there a few years ago, and I really liked it.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Did you see a good show?
Yeah, and we went out to Loretta Lynn's place, and you drive up, and you drive into her little, it's not a village, it's just her house and a few houses and on an old sawmill. Her granddaughter's working the popcorn stand. She's family all over working. And they go, hey, you want to go up and see the old house?
Yeah.
Well, hell, give me $15. Okay, here. And we go into the old house where she used to do the Crisco ads back in the 50s and 60s. It was incredible, really.
I'll be done.
Yeah, no. And we got a peek of her through the back window to a real house.
Oh, she was there.
Yeah, yeah, she's tiny.
Wow.
She's tiny, but God bless her. She's she must be pushing 90, but she's
must be now.
An amazing, amazing lady.
But, yeah.
You know.
Jeez.
Well, we're gonna come back. We'll be breaking in about a minute, so we'll break it off for now. We'll talk a little bit more about your travels and what you've done. I find it absolutely fascinating that Bruce decided at 58, after a life changing event, to chuck it in, buy an RV, and arbitrage with the REIT market, which we don't believe me in. In this side, we're not allowed to take home equity money and invest it. Bruce was able to do that on his own. He's not a client. So we'll talk about that in the future. Thank you. We'll be right back. Dennis O'Brien, O'Brien Retirement. Thank you. O'Brien, Retirement, Life, and Investing Show. I'm with Bruce Burton, who retired early at 58, got an RV, and went to see the country for 7 years, November through April of every year. And, Bruce, welcome back, and let's talk about some more stories of your travels. Where'd you go next?
Well, thank you, Dennis. Yeah, November through May every year.
Every year.
Yep, and it was great. And the first year, I just went right down the coast on little Route 1, and... Not through the northeast, but as soon as I got down past Washington, D.C., I did, and stayed right along the coast and went down through Virginia Beach and the Outer Banks. And, of course, it was cold in the Outer Banks then, so it wasn't real crowded or anything. But I did get stuck on a little island of Ocracoke at the very tippy bottom of the Outer Banks. And
was there a storm?
A bad storm came through, and
yeah.
It isolated this little island of Ocracoke. And I went down there to see that the Knights in Rodanta was a movie with Richard Gere, and I wanted to see that beach house. But when I got onto that island, the storm was so bad it blew the bridge out behind me, and which was just terrible. I couldn't get back.
Well, here we are on the radio talking about it.
That's right.
Right.
And they stopped the ferry. First time in 20 years they stopped the ferry.
Wow.
And so the highest ground I could find was a little point in a parking lot.
Yep.
And the water was coming right up to the wheels.
Oh, boy.
And the bad part was that I fell into the cockpit of the truck and broke my hand. And I couldn't get off this little island. And in the morning, the RV was rocking like a boat. And in the morning, I found a boat right up next to the RV. It had blown there during the night. And I didn't know how bad my hand was broken until I got to the mainland 2 days later. And I found a surgeon and had to get it set and pinned, and then I couldn't drive. So the only thing I could do, I put a backpack on, I took my briefcase and my laptop, and I got on a train and headed home for 6 weeks until I healed up.
Yep.
And at the end of that, I went back down and got the pin out, got back in the RV, and kept on going. Very gingerly, of course.
Very gingerly. Wow.
But that was... That was one of my worst problems, and after that I was a little more careful.
Did you have any rust damage on the RV from the ocean water?
No, not right then I didn't.
Yeah.
It might have come later, but it wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
And I had very little problems with it, really. It ran
it ran well.
Quite well.
What kind was it?
It was Four Winds.
Four Winds?
Four Winds.
Yeah, I've seen them on the highway.
Yeah. It was beautiful. Like I said, I got it from BMW, so it had this vinyl wrap all around it, logo. And it was green vinyl, and it was of this motorcycle rider.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, dragging his knee in the turns and everything. So everybody that saw this vehicle, they just came over to him and say, "Hey, what are you doing? Are you the guy? Are you the racer? Are you the racer?"
That's right. They would know down there.
Yeah,
the
they would know down there.
Yeah, yeah,
And one kid in a cave one time, I went into a cave complex down in Shenandoah Valley, and a woman saw the RV out in the parking lot, and she went and got her kid out of school because the kid... The kid just idolized this racer.
Really?
Yeah. And I come out of the cave, and I went into the little shop there on the way out. And she says, "Excuse me, excuse me." She says, "I need your autograph." And I then she told me she took the kid out of school, so I just kind of played the game like I was
disappoint him.
At that point,
I didn't want
to disappoint him.
Yeah.
But it was all tricked out. It was a beautiful, beautiful machine.
Wow, isn't that great?
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, it was
amazing.
And
now, you were telling me one time a story about you wrote it down about the were you in Mexico one time?
Yeah,
you went over the border a few times.
I went into Mexico several times. Usually, I was walking in there, and because you're not supposed to. Ride your motorcycle in there, so I stayed away from that.
Yeah.
And but I would walk in, and but anyway, down in Big Bend National Park, which is right down the very tippy bottom of Texas.
Yep.
The border had just reopened when I got down there from the 9/11. They closed the borders.
Yep.
And it was just reopening after I think 10 or 11 years, and there was a little town on the other side of the Rio Grande called Boquilla. And I decided to go over there. So there was a border crossing, and I went to the border guard, and he said, "Are you going across?" And I said, "Yeah." He says, "Well, there's a little path down there through the trees." And he said, "When you get to the river," he said, "you can walk across, or you can wade across, or you could take a boat." I said, "Really?" He says, "Yeah, there's a guy down there with a rowboat." He said, "For $5, he'll take you across the river." I said, "Really?" He says, "Yep." Yeah. So that's what I did. I went down there. I got in the boat, and I didn't want to walk because I was afraid I'd trip on rocks and wet my camera and all.
Yeah.
So I got on the other side of the river, and there's a guy over there with a mule and a donkey and a horse.
Yep.
And he said, "Now, Boquilla is about a half a mile." He said, "Do you want to take the horse or the donkey, or you want to walk?" And I said, "No, I'll take the horse." He says, "You know how to ride?" I says, "Yeah." So I gave him $2, and he put me on a horse, and off I went towards Boquilla. And this town had been isolated for 10 years.
Yeah.
And it was just dirt streets over there.
Yep.
There was no doors on the buildings. It was, there was just nothing over there. It was very desolate.
Yeah.
So I got over there and I had a kid tie the horse up, and I'm walking down the street, and another guy comes by on a horse, and he says, "Hey, hop up." I says, "What are you talking about? Where are we going?" "Oh, hop up, man." He said, "Just give me a dollar." He says, "I'll take you around the village." So I did. He took me to the little one-room schoolhouse. He took me down the bank to the Rio Grande, back in this little canyon where his friends were fishing.
Yep.
And he introduced me to his friends. We went back. He showed me the little church. And we went back into a little bar. And it was the typical little old bar like you see in a movie with those swinging doors.
Yep.
And got in there, and I bought him a beer. I had a couple beers, and I met some... errant Americans hiking through.
Yep.
And we all got together and we played a game of pool and we had a beer. And the thing I remember most about that place was the men's room. There was no men's room. It was just like over a cliff.
Right.
And it pointed to the ladies' room, which was two Y-shaped poles with a bar across them about 2 feet high. And that's where the
oh my God.
Where the ladies went.
Yep.
And but I met an interesting guy there named Glenn Fells, and he owned a bar called La Kiva in Arizona. And I got to meet him, and we had a great time, and he invited me to the bar later.
Yep.
And later on in the trip, I did make it to his place. And so that was the this little town of Boquilla. Very, very interesting.
Yeah. And it's not really cool, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it was great. And then later on, I was looking for this ghost town in Terlingua. And this ghost town was where his bar was, called La Kiva. And his uncle was a geologist, and La Kiva is Spanish for the cave. And that was the name of the bar. And I went in, and I was looking for a place to stay that night. And I found this guy that I had met in the little Mexican town, and he told me I could stay there. And he said, just pull off to the side. So I pulled off to the side, and I went in, and I had a hamburger and stuff and a beer. And it came out in the morning, and there was a big skull of a Texas Longhorn on the other side of the RV sitting on a pole.
Yeah.
And I opened up the window, and I saw this thing standing there, and it just really shocked me because I didn't see it there when I went to sleep.
Yeah.
But Glenn Fells is unfortunate, but the following year I read that he got murdered in that parking lot.
He did.
He'd get murdered in that parking lot right where he had told me to sleep. And it was a confrontation, I guess, with a customer. But he was such a nice guy, and
yeah,
it's just unfortunate. But another one of the many people that I met that was fantastic.
Yeah, it's absolutely riveting. It's really amazing. My favorite state I've been to, and you might agree or disagree, is Wyoming. I just thought Wyoming.
Oh
was
yeah,
Wyoming. The Grand Tetons, the Yellowstone.
The Grand Tetons was cold when I came through, and I stayed at Yellowstone for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But coming out the top of Yellowstone was Mammoth Springs, which is absolutely beautiful. You've probably been there. But the next town into Wyoming was, I think it was a town called Dennis. And I rode through this little town, and I'm going along, and I was looking for a place to stay, kind of, and I off to the side, there was a rodeo going on, and a guy was doing this on this bucking bronco. And so I pulled in there, and I had never seen a guy in a bucking bronco for real before. So I sat there, and I watched it, and dust flying everywhere, horses around. And I watched it for a minute, and I asked one of the women that was watching it, I says, who owns this corral here? I said, I was kind of looking for a place to stay the night. And she said, well, Warren's right over there. He owns all the horses. You can talk to him. So I talked to him, and it turns out he was looking for somebody to babysit these horses at night because he had to leave them there for this big event.
Yep.
So he asked me if I would babysit for these horses. I said, what are you talking about? I said, I'm from Connecticut. I don't know anything about babysitting these wild horses. He said, well, you're looking for a place to stay. He says, you just pull over there to the side, and if any ruckus starts happening, he says, here's my cell phone. He said, but they'll just kick each other, knock over the water. Sure enough, that's what they did. I heard all this crashing around. And he had told me in the morning that there'd be another horse trailer coming in to deliver more horses.
Yeah.
So, sure enough, about 6:30 in the morning, not your horse trailer, it's a double-decker horse trailer.
Wow.
With 80 horses in it. And the second load, it was 40 and 40. And they unloaded all these horses into the corral. And it turns out that every year he has this big event where the horses run through the streets of this little town up to his ranch. And they herd these horses through. And so I got to stay there and watch it. And they had this buck and bronco competition and riding and roping and everything. And then on Sunday, these cowboys, they herded all these horses down the street, and the horses run right through the main street of the town.
Yep.
And I videoed the whole thing, and then they herd them up to his ranch.
Yep.
And they have a huge party at his ranch, an overnight party.
Yep.
And I drove the RV right up there, and I parked in his lawn, and there was a lot of people up there. They had a big bonfire and a lot of food.
Absolutely fantastic story.
Yeah, and he was happened to be a big game guide.
Yeah.
And he had this trophy room with just elk and bobcat.
That's fantastic. Fantastic. So,
they were all such nice people.
Yeah. Dennis O'Brien with Bruce Burton telling about his retirement travels. So we'll be right back. Thank you. Dennis O'Brien, welcome back to the Retirement Life and Investing Show. I'm with Bruce Burton, who retired early. Bruce and I met in my office about an hour or two before the show today, and I was writing out questions. Bruce said, what are you doing? I said, well, these are the questions I've gotten in the last 2 or 3 weeks. And he was reading them going, no way. And I go, way? You know, this is the type of stuff that I have to deal with. I really enjoy, but people say, oh, what do you do for a living? You're just, you know, just a financial advisor, blah, blah, blah. Bruce does his own thing, and we have a lot in common in the way we approach it. But I thought he was interested in it, and I thought maybe we could read off some of the questions. What do you think, Bruce?
These are fantastic questions. Your job is far from run-of-the-mill and mundane when I look at some of these questions that Dennis pushed over. Like, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah. The first question I'm getting these days, and this is from probably the wealthier the person, the more they're asking this, which is, when will the market crash? I just look at them and go, okay, April 2nd, 2000, you know, really? You know, but the warning signs will be there, and I tell everybody there'll be certain warning signs, and if you want to discuss it further, let me know. But I'm not going to get into the nitty-gritty here. But other questions are, how can I get more income without betting the ranch? One person actually put it that way. I don't work there anymore. Should I roll over my 401k, 403b, not 402b, 403b, or 457? The other question is, how can I save more for retirement? What's the best strategy? Well, the best strategy is this, automatically invest, which means if get that 401k going, all right? Here's the automatic millionaire action steps, okay? Make sure you signed up for your retirement account at work. If you don't have one at work, open an IRA. If you're self-employed, open a SEP IRA or one-person 401k profit-sharing plan. Decide how much you're going to contribute to your account, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20. The more you do, the better off you are. Decide how you want to invest your retirement contributions. And whatever account you open, automatically have your contributions automatically withheld. And if there's a match, great. So if they do 3% match, make sure you put in the 6, 50%. You get the 3, and you have 9% going away. The more you do, the better off you are. If you just want to save money, automatically save 1 hour a day's income. So if you work 8 hours a day, I want 1 hour saved.
That's a very good analogy.
Yeah,
right there,
yeah. David Sachs came out with that, who wrote the book Automatic Millionaire, which, by the way, every newlywed couple should read all through, because I find the most disciplined savers are the wealthiest. At the end of the rainbow.
And Bruce, you obviously started, right? And it's very doable.
If you put the max in, or almost the max, and
reinvest the dividends. That's another very important thing that I like.
Yes, reinvest, automate. Everything can be automated these
automated.
Days.
Automated. Yep. Have it automated. Taken right out of your check. Yep. And when I first took a good salary position, I wasn't sure if I could afford it. And my boss said, you can't afford not to.
Yes.
And that was the best advice he ever gave.
The best person you could have run across early in your life.
Yeah.
Another question I get is, what's this Bitcoin thing and should I buy more? And we're going to talk about Bitcoin next week with a guy who locally here is considered an expert in that. So we'll talk about that.
That'll be interesting.
Another question I got this week. Here's a wild one. Should I set up a conservatorship for my disabled child? Right? When should I start taking Social Security?
That's another good one. A lot of people agonize over that.
Yeah, when should I start, you know?
Yeah.
Is this tax plan going to cost me money? Boy, I've gotten a lot of questions on that one. We kind of have to wait and see, because there's pros and cons depending on what bracket you're in, whether you hit the alternative minimum tax how much you write off on your taxes and whatnot.
Yeah, it depends a lot on who's giving you the info, too, I think.
Exactly, exactly.
And what brackets they're looking at.
Yeah.
Sometimes the brackets are $50,000 to $80,000, or it might be a lower bracket, which is going to be more, and higher brackets will be less.
Hey, we got Sam in Westerly. Hi, Sam. How are you?
Let's see. It's still 79. And still breathing.
Still breathing. Still working, too, right?
Well, let's see. I retired early. I retired right out of high school, right to EB.
And you're still there, right?
Still there.
60 years later?
61 years.
61 years, Bruce. Can you believe this guy?
You're not still working, really, at EB, are you?
I'm still there full time.
Wow.
Well, that's
God
fantastic.
Bless you. Master shipbuilder.
Fantastic.
Wow.
1.5 times.
Wow. Boy, I guess so. I can't believe you were there that long.
That's fantastic, Sam. So what's going on with you?
Well, I thought your guest had an interesting story today. It sounds like a Connecticut Yankee on the road.
On the road.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's a Connecticut Yankee. All right.
Yeah, yeah. As soon as he opened his mouth, they knew.
They knew. Yeah, a lot of people couldn't quite place it. They said most of them thought I was from Rhode Island. And I was born and raised over there.
Unless it was Cranston.
Cranston, that's right. But it's hard to cover it up. But the only thing I could do, Sam, was use it as a springboard for a lot of great conversations.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what it's all about, too, because it's great when you meet someone not from, you know.
It is. And the people are so curious. The people in this country are all just fantastic people. Yeah. And I never had a burning desire to go to Europe or anywhere else till I saw this country. And like I was telling Dennis a little while ago, it's when you travel this country, the roads are all good, the water's safe to drink, the money's all the same, and the police departments are all relatively uncorrupted. So it makes traveling a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah,
it does.
It is an amazing yeah. story.
I mean, a cop one time stopped me in the Everglades, and I had just stopped. I could see from horizon to horizon, and nothing but swamp, and that's just what I wanted. And I stopped there, and I was just getting ready to cook some dinner, and I see these two lights coming down this little dirt road I was backed up into. And a cop come and he stopped about 100 feet from me and he walked up and he said, "Are you alone?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Do you have weapons?" I said, "No." He said, "Do you realize where you are?" And I said, "Well, yeah, I'm in the Everglades." He says, "You're on Dead Man's Road." I said, "Dead Man's Road?" He says, "Yes, you are." He says, "You see that little hammock over there?" Hammock is a little island. He says, "You see that little hammock?" He says, You realize you're only about 40 miles from South Miami, and they love these vehicles because they like to cook meth in them.
Oh, my God.
And he said, "This is where your body could land." He said, "They'll take your vehicle, they'll put your body in, kill you, put your body in the swamp, the animals will get rid of you." And he said, "And you're gone." He says, "That's why we call this in the police force Dead Man's Road." And I almost said, "Well, hang on, let me follow you out." But he says, "You're not doing anything wrong. You can stay here if you want." But he said, "I strongly suggest you don't."
Wow.
So, like I said, I almost said, "Well, hang on. Let me follow you out."
Yeah.
So,
you got a t-shirt made saying, "I survived Dead Man's."
That's what I should do.
Right, Sam? I mean,
jeez.
May I reinforce that? I remember an EB employee that I worked with one time. He was an engineer. And his parents were vacationing then down there in Florida, and they were parked over in an orchard or something somewhere. And they got murdered and thrown in the trunk.
No.
Really?
Yes. Now, this guy I'm talking about, he just died here recently, but
wow.
I never forgot that.
What town was that near?
I don't know what town, but I say they were vacationing or something down there in Florida. And
wow.
They were in an orchard or something, and they just got murdered.
Yeah.
Wow, that's scary. I spent several nights in an orange orchard that I found, and I just pulled in there and just a little ways from Disney World.
Well, anytime you travel, you got to be aware of your surroundings.
Be real careful.
Yeah, you
got to
know
be
your
very
surroundings.
Careful.
Yeah.
Now, this is like over 40 years ago, but.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know.
So it's nothing new. It hasn't changed.
No, it can happen anywhere, right, Sam?
Yeah.
Well, thanks for calling in, brother. Appreciate it.
God bless you.
Yeah, right, take
Thanks,
care.
Sam.
Bye bye. So, anyway, that was amazing. We got a minute to go, so we're going to wrap it up. I'd like to thank you, Bruce, very much for coming on and sharing
your
stories.
Thank you very much.
And we'll
for
have to
me.
Do this again because I love it. I love stories. And as you started talking, I started thinking about our travels and some of the crazy, you know, crazy stuff that happens. But thank you very much, Bruce, who retired at 58 and bought an RV and went around the country for 7 years, every November through April by himself, and met hundreds of people.
Hundreds.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Dennis.
Go to www.obrienretired.com if you'd like my retirement 10 commandments. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.